Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind. I'm your host, Mark Troutman. This educational, personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. This special episode was recorded live from Camp Fi in Colorado Springs. Enjoy. Welcome to the Mark's Money Mind Show. I am your host, Mark Troutman. We are recording in front of a live audience here at Rocky Mountain Camp Fi, week one, July 4th weekend, 2025. Let's hear it. Today, I have my good friend, Kevin Sebesta, with me up here as a co-host. You've been on the show previously, I think, as host and guest, if I recall, right?
Is my mic on this time?
It is on.
Okay.
How are you today?
Fantastic. It's day three. People are looking tired, but energized at the same time. Or is that a mirror? I don't know. It's a wonderful experience here, and we met a lot of new people and a lot of growth in my brain that's going to take weeks to actually process. So thank you, everybody, for being here and sharing.
And it's Sunday, so day really, what, two and a half, I guess you would say. And Friday was July 4th, officially. And one thing, I thought this was kind of funny. We were out watching the fireworks up on the hill there. And Kevin, I think someone said, oh, those fireworks look pretty cool. And Kevin said, you know what? Fire works.
Fire.
And I was like, yeah, that's actually pretty cool. So let's talk about how fire works. So I thought it would be fun to bring up three different kind of groups of people talking about their current stage of FIRE or financial independence. So the first person we're going to bring up is what I would call in the discovery stage or really new to FI. So let's welcome Allison to the stage.
Yes.
She's got Chris Luger's heavy metal money t-shirt on. I love it.
Yes.
All right. Allison, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe how old you are, and then also, how did you kind of find the whole FI community? Very interested in that story.
Yeah, so I'm 27 years old, and I've known about FI for just about 2 years now. So I graduated college in 2023. I started working a corporate job, and I was like, oh, do I really have to do this for another 40 years? It's a big difference from, like, college life. And then my coworker said, oh, we actually have to work till we're 67. And I'm like, man, no way. So I think in my office, I Googled, like, how do you retire early? And I came across the FIRE subreddits, and I just started reading stuff on there. I was fortunate to have a good job out of college. So I liked my job, good company, good place to work, good coworkers, good pay. So I was able to save. And I knew I was doing okay, but learning about FIRE just let me know that, like, I can really kind of accelerate things if I start to invest.
And this is your second Camp Fi event, if I recall. And how did you find out? I'm just very interested in this story because I do know what the story is, but I think everyone would enjoy hearing about this. You know, a mutual friend of ours. How did you kind of stumble across that element of FI and that individual?
Yeah, so I found about Camp Fi through TikTok. Amber, who I follow on there, had posted about this Camp Fi last year, and I'd already been following her because she's kind of local to where I live. She's a reseller, and I'm also a reseller. So she'd posted that there was this Camp Fi. It looked cool. So I looked online, and I found out about the Midwest one. I got on the wait list for that, and then I ended up getting off the wait list, so I went to that one last September.
Yeah, and actually, I met Amber myself the first time at Midwest. And Midwest is in Minnesota. It's a very cool camp. If anyone has an opportunity to go to that one, I highly recommend it. And I also am very interested in kind of your story. Maybe did you talk about financial independence or just finance stuff in general in your household, or was it something that was taboo? If you don't mind giving us kind of a background on, you know, how your family dynamic was when it came to money.
Yeah, we didn't really talk a lot about, like, money in general. It wasn't taboo or anything. I just think it wasn't really like spoken about. I do remember my mom telling us never to put anything on layaway because she had learned about that through her dad. Nice. But layaway just isn't really a thing anymore anyways. So like I knew to save money. I remember my dad like giving me spare change as a kid and like putting it in my piggy bank and counting it and taking it to the bank. So like I had some basic like personal finance 101, but we didn't really talk about like investing or anything like that. As a teenager, I found Dave Ramsey on my own. So I kind of listened to him a lot as a kid. Yeah.
So I talked to you early on this weekend and was just amazed by how you just took action to go to events and go in and be part of this world. I'm really curious, do you feel like you're a part of the community like we feel you are? Do you sense that?
Yeah, I think so. Everyone here is just like super welcoming and it's just a really good place to learn. Yeah, like everyone's so nice. They're willing to like help you with any questions that you have and just like offer up advice. Like Kevin, when we were at breakfast that day, you were like, oh, are you Rothing enough of your money? And just like asked me that up front and just like gave me that suggestion openly. And yeah, I think it's really cool.
Technically, I said ask other people as well.
Well, yeah.
Because I'm just some random weird guy at breakfast asking if you put money in a Roth IRA, which is okay in this world, but nice. And so I've seen you talk with all different people of ages, and I mean, and you have great conversations with them from what I see. Do you just, what do you talk about with other people? Do they ask you about you or do you ask them about them? Because you're just outgoing.
Yeah, it's definitely both. I guess I'm kind of surprised to hear that I'm outgoing because I'm definitely an introvert. But yeah, I mean, it's just kind of cool to hear where people are at in their journey. People obviously assume that I'm early on. So yeah, I just ask about where they're at. Sometimes I'll ask specifics about like real estate investing or just different topics I'm interested in. Or I just listen in on conversations people are having too.
Me too.
And I'm curious, like your friend group outside of this community, is this something that friends in your kind of social circle talk about? Or are you kind of the outlier, as many of us are? I'm just very curious about that with your kind of social network.
Yeah, I'm definitely the outlier. I don't really talk about it much to my friends because I know like I'm in a very like fortunate position and I don't want to be like, oh, how much are you guys investing when I know that they're just paying off student loans. So it doesn't really come up that much, but it's something I've been like interested in. And like I go to my ChooseFi local group. So it's nice to have like another community there to talk about finance with.
And since we're, you know, close to the end of the weekend, well, tomorrow's the last day. What could you give us some insight into what was beneficial about the weekend, things maybe you would want to learn more about, and kind of your assessment of the weekend here?
I think my favorite part is just meeting people and then seeing people that I've met at previous events, because there's a lot of people who like repeat these, which is really cool. But yeah, I think the best part is just the connections that you get with everyone on different stages of their journey, and just all the different knowledge that you can get.
And you said you were interested in reselling, and that's something that you do. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this like side hustle that you have? I'm very curious about that.
Yeah. So I started reselling in like 2018 just as a way to make some extra money. My dad sold car parts on eBay when I was a kid, so I kind of always knew eBay was a thing. So that's what I started with, just going to garage sales at first, finding stuff that would sell for a profit. I watched a lot of YouTube videos. And then I went to college, kind of scaled back on that just because I didn't have a car and I didn't want to focus on it. And then when I graduated, I took it up again. I mostly did like thrift stores. And then Amber had posted about this guy who was selling pallets of clothing. So I bought one of those. And then I bought two more. So, yeah, I just think it's fun to see what stuff will sell for online. And kind of have that extra income outside of work that I kind of have more control over.
And then what kind of resources. You mentioned you go to your local Choose FI event. You obviously went to the Camp 5 Midwest. You've come to this one. Are there other resources that you have found helpful in learning more about this whole kind of financial independence journey, route, what have you?
Yeah, mostly Instagram and TikTok. Like, I just follow a lot of creators on there who post about personal finance.
Note to self, get on TikTok.
Yes. It's not all bad. And then podcasts.
Okay.
I'm wondering, because I sense the intelligence in you. Do you have a sense of yourself? Do you feel strong and powerful knowing you have a good financial structure versus other people around you that kind of struggle differently and maybe aren't as intentional?
Yeah, it can definitely be like empowering to know that like I've got that buffer zone if anything ever happens. I didn't start having like a budget until 2024. Okay. And actively doing that just made me feel way more secure about like finances and everything and just like more responsible. Just knowing like what money I'm bringing in, where it's going. I just think that's super important.
Do you remember when I spoke, I said everybody here is exceptional? You're right there at the top of the list. We're all very impressed with you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. I'm so glad that you came up here. That was pretty brave. I know it's tough to do that, especially like, oh, Camp 5, you know, second time, and you got to come on a podcast. So good job. Thanks for coming up. Excellent. Really appreciate it.
Much better than me.
So, but you have practice. You're doing good. Don't worry about it. So for this next guest or guests, I thought about kind of this middle period where people have, you know, kind of figured out FI or they have a pretty good idea how this all works. And they're in what some people will call the boring middle. And it's interesting because I had an episode, and I'll try to remember to put the link in the show notes, saying, you know, we really need a better name for this boring middle thing because it doesn't have to be boring. And it was Ryan Brennan actually wrote an email into me and said, you know what? How about the mindful middle? And of course, being Mark's Money Mind, I gravitated to that. I love that idea. But I think this kind of middle period of, you know, you figured out how to do this. There is going to be a timeline of, you know, reaching your FI goals. And in many cases, it might be 10 years, might be 15 years. But you can use this time to kind of design your best life while on your route to financial independence. And so I want to bring up Camille and Daryl to talk about that.
Just for the audio portion, they're dressed much nicer than Mark and I.
Yes, they got dressed up for this. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey, how you first came to this. I'm also very interested. You're not native to the United States and kind of the whole like backstory, if you don't mind.
So Camille and I, we both immigrated from the Philippines. We studied there and we had the opportunity to take our craft here, to work here as professional physical therapist. And so during our working time, we are natural savers because the country where we came from, it's not a very well-off, we're not also well-off in that country. So we are actually pushed by society and by our families to save a lot. So we are natural savers, but we don't have the concept of where to put the money or that if retiring early is even a possibility for us.
I think like for me, I moved here like around 2016. So the different thing with us is like at least his family is okay. But I have the intentionality of like helping out my family when I move here. So my dad is the only one working. So my mom raised us up. So I want to help my family like with my siblings' college. So I help them with that. And we have some debt, so we have to pay that off. So even though I'm like very frugal, my money's like whoop, whoop, every month. Just goes through my living expenses and send money back home. And I was also taking my doctorate that time too. So like I didn't know how to, like I saved, but it goes somewhere else. So I'm very fortunate that when I started dating him, he actually like told me, hey, you know, you need to save some money for yourself too, because, you know, in the plane, if something happens, you put your mask on first before you help another person. And that, oh, I was like, oh, I didn't realize that. I was like, I'm just like, you know, but then in, so that's like around 2019, we bought a house. But around 2020, I need to stop working because my visa expired and my lawyer said, oh, you cannot work, but you can stay in the US. So that was a tough time for me because it's always like, it's always equal for the both of us. So we have a house and then I can't contribute. So it's hard. And so one of our friends told us about House Hacking by Craig Kurloff. So I was like, okay, I'm going to study that. I'm going to learn that. And after I read it, I told him, I'm going to rent out both of our rooms. And so it worked out well. So it was COVID time. He's, you know, he cannot see a lot of patients. I don't have work, but our living expenses are paid off because of our tenants. So I guess started there and
during that time. And since we already know about financial independence at that time, we started listening to more podcasts and we just learned about everything, and we also learned about Camfy, and then we went the following year when it opened up.
And so how many Camfys have you been to then?
I believe it's four.
Yes. Oh, wow. Which locations? I'm curious. Which
just this location.
We always go there. Yeah.
Okay. We love this.
Okay, great. And what kind of resources were, you know, beneficial in kind of finding out about financial independence? What were some of the things that you found beneficial in learning about this topic?
I have been listening to podcasts about finance even before 2020, even before we did the House Hack. My entry is a podcast called How to Money, and where they interviewed Brad Barrett. And that's when I found about Choose FI. And from there, it's a rabbit hole. So we researched everything and we started reading the books that they recommend. And every time we learn something new and we apply it with our daily budget, with our monthly budget, and with our expenses.
Camille, you talked about family and sending money to help and honestly being a strong leader for your family. And we do know you have family joining you here.
Yeah.
And
I don't know where he
that's
is.
Amazing. Is there anything you want to say to any of them today?
Oh.
On their special day? You want to call that out?
I don't know where he is, but happy birthday to my brother. I'm very proud of him because, you know, early on in my, like when I first started here, yes, you know that I'm like sending money and I'm helping them, but it was actually a teamwork. You know, if they didn't use that well, you know, my brother is now working as a physical therapist here. My sister is now working as a psychologist in Canada. So, you know, if they didn't like use that money well that I sent them, then it's all for nothing. So it's really a teamwork. And I'm so like, I'm so happy that they appreciate it in a way that they're like, hey, I'm going to do everything that way. This money is not wasted. So I'm grateful for that.
Now, I understand there was a specific book that you required, I think it was your brother to read, right?
Yeah, yes.
Tell us a little bit about that story.
So with his employer, they don't want to pay for his like hotel when he first moved to Austin. And I was like, okay, I'm going to pay for your hotel, but only if you read The Millionaire Next Door. Because I don't know. And then I told him, okay, we're going to do a big book review just to make sure that I know that you learned it.
He even quizzed him on that.
So. Yeah.
And he took it seriously. He was explaining to us, hey, this chapter, it says like this and like that. So,
And that's actually one of my favorite books.
Yeah.
So that was one of the instrumental books on my FI journey many, many, many moons ago. So I'm curious, what were the, you know, kind of the key points from that book that you wanted to make sure got across?
I think because sometimes with, I'm not sure if you guys know, sometimes with the Filipino culture, even though like we're struggling, we don't want other people to see it. So we kind of like show off and, you know, try to like buy things or do some vacations that really we cannot afford. So I don't want him to like be like that. Like with the millionaire next door, hey, he's a millionaire, but you don't really know because he's not like showing off, because he's like funding his lifestyle in a way that it's gonna, you know, it adds to his quality of life, not to the quantity that he's like, you know, not like the stuff. It's like how he's growing as an individual. So I really like that part, like just focusing on yourself and not really with how other people will perceive you, if you're rich or what. But you need to know that you're rich enough yourself. So,
yeah, that was definitely one of my takes. And the other one was, I think one of the things in there, they said, oh, all millionaires save at least 10% of everything they earn. And, of course, we changed that to a higher percentage. Yeah. But that was one of the things. And it also said things like, you know, people drive older cars. Yes. They don't look like millionaires. And so that resonated with me. Did you ever read that book, Kevin?
Absolutely.
Yeah, tell me, oh, yeah. What was your take on that?
Drive a Camry. what is it? The pause? Prestigious accumulators of wealth, something like that. And and there's they have calculations just in case you're a geek, so you can figure out if you're doing good by age and everything. And so it just talks about normal people, and normal people, stealth wealth is the new term for many of us, right? We talked about that in one of our sessions. No one would look around this room and think there's lots of millionaires here because we just like normal people in t-shirts. But I had a question, Camila, which was, you've gone through phases of your life with the move, the education, the support of family back there, here, and you've already quickly progressing through these phases. Where are you at now with your phases? Because you guys are very positive on your Phi journey and the discussions. Do you think you're in a stable living with some saving phase, or are you still doing a lot of assistance, or is everybody else stabilizing, allowing you to move forward?
So I think I'll answer the assistance part first, because I recently had a conversation with my sister and I really cried after that conversation. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. I think we were from our friend that time. We were driving on our way back home. So I was talking with my sister, and I don't know what topic we were talking about that time, but she kind of like tell me, Ate is like bigger sister. You don't have to worry about us anymore. We can support ourselves now. You can just like worry about you and Kuya Daryl. Cause before I was like so worried all the time that I feel like my parents never asked me for this, but I just want to help them. And so I put like this earth, this heavy like thing in my shoulder that, oh, I have this responsibility to better our lives because I don't want our life to be like that. And so when my sister said that, I felt so much relief that, oh, yeah, I didn't realize it's all okay now that I can just think of ourselves and focus on ourselves. And they're in a good situation that they can help me now. Because before I worried that it's, you know, I need to support my parents, with aging parents and all that. But now I have my brother and sister and they're in a good situation. And now we're a team. Like, I just feel so relieved after I heard that. It's like, I didn't realize that part.
Yeah.
And I forgot your other question.
I want to respond because I know how strong you are and how much you help. I didn't know this was going to happen. I wouldn't have done this. But I think what you're sharing as people hear this, and often women, this community has many strong women. A lot of households are led by strong women in this community. I see it. And I think it's important for people and women to hear what you're sharing, how you've helped and how it helped them. And how they realize that these great things can happen. And then the second part of my question was, where are you at now in your saving? And apparently you're able to reset now somewhat and have a second phase or a second chapter, which is more like your ninth chapter in this journey because you've done so much. How are you doing with money saving? Are you on an aggressive path? Are you stabilized? Are you enjoying life? Are you taking some kind of break to regroup and enjoy before resaving? How do you feel about your own world? Because you've done so much already.
So right now, I can say that we are at maybe 85 to 90% on our way to the number that we designated ourselves. And we feel like we are still aggressively saving. We're maxing out the retirement accounts, but we still want to enjoy life. So in our current position, we are currently working only 9 months in the year. And 3 months of those is usually spent traveling. We feel like that if we work those 3 months, we can get there faster. But I don't think it's worth the work that we will put in. And in our line of work, we don't want to be burned out. That's why we're still saving. We actually found the balance in aggressively saving and still enjoying our life, designing the life that maybe we can still continue doing this, working 9 months a year, or maybe scale down to 6 months a year.
And I'm very interested because one of the reasons I wanted to bring you guys up, beyond the fact that you've been so helpful to your family, which I just am amazed at, is that you've been able to use your kind of financial security, I would say, to design the life you want to live. And it seems from the short conversation that we had on the hike, Camille and I had a nice conversation, that you're able to decide, hey, we're going to be travel physical therapists. It kind of works with our lifestyle design. So I'd be very curious in how you came to that decision and how that's working for you. And I know some other people that were here were like, hey, I want to talk to them about this. This sounds like a really great idea. So I'd love to hear more about that.
So that decision into transitioning to still traveling while we're working, while putting that travel time into our work lives, came up when Camille actually asked one of her supervisor for 1 month off, 1 month unpaid leave. But yeah, I'll let her tell you that.
So I asked her, I would like to take a month off, and I know I only have like 1 week PTO, but it's okay, you don't have to pay me. And she was like, oh, did somebody die in your family? Oh, nobody died. and then the next question, it really threw me off, and she asked me, are you guys like having marital problems? I was like, no. I just want to take a time off. And so I told him about that, and he was like, why did she ask you those questions? And so we're like, you know, I guess it's time for us to start like travel PT. And I remember in their first campfire,
yes,
that Kevin, you mentioned at this lunchtime about how this, you know, our crowd, our mm-hmm. friends, our family, how they kind of like not push you but pull you yeah. up. And I really felt we felt that way when we first got here. In our, what year was that?
That was 2022 when we started traveling, and we actually shared it with the crowd here during that time. And just seeing everybody cheering us on and being happy for us, and yeah, it made us feel like we made the right decision.
Yeah, because it was scary for us before, because we were so used to like doing full-time work, and then just moving to another state, like we don't know what's going to happen there. It's like a different. So you guys like really help us with the decision. We felt more like empowered with that. Because you were like, oh, we can do it. You guys can do it because we were able to do it too. So I felt that you guys pulled us up. So, yeah.
I think everybody that listens to this, I think you're going to change parts of their lives by what you shared and what you've done and where you're headed. I think it's just remarkable.
And for anyone else in this kind of, you know, let's call it mindful middle, any advice for them as far as, you know, how to approach this kind of middle period of we figured stuff out, but we've got a little bit of time to do this journey. Any suggestions for people?
Yeah. So yeah, they call it the boring middle. Now it's the mindful middle. Yeah. But it doesn't have to be boring.
Yeah, yes. I don't think it's boring.
Yeah, I was telling, we talk about our plans, our financial independent plans every month. And when I bring out the subject that, hey, we have this number of years left until we reach our number. Mm-hmm. And if I see in her eyes that, oh my God, that's too long. I don't think I can work that much. I'm quick to suggest to her that, hey, maybe let's do this cruise. Let's do this. Let's take a month off and travel in Mexico or Costa Rica, yeah, or Peru. And that lights her up. And that makes the boring middle an exciting middle, actually. So
I think, yeah, it's also like we talk about how we can like simulate our retirement now, like how our retirement life will be. So, oh, okay, when I retire, I want to like be a polyglot, I'll learn a lot of languages. But why do I have to wait for that? I can like do that now. So we're like trying to learn languages now. And, oh, I want to learn how to do some dancing, like some ballroom dancing. Oh, just teach me now. It's free. So things like that. You can like simulate your dream retirement now. That way it's not going to be too hard for you to transition. And then if you try it now and you don't like it, and then try another one, and then maybe you will like it. And then it won't be hard for you when you retire because you already have these things that you want to do. And,
And then I have one last question, and that is, it sounds like you talk about this together, right? You're a team in this effort. Can you, and I think you mentioned that you have monthly meetings or something like that.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that dynamic of kind of working together as a team on this. Because sometimes we see, you know, one spouse is really into this and the other isn't, or partner. And it sounds like you guys have a team effort on this. Can you maybe expand on that a little bit?
So this monthly meeting, we actually call it meal planning because, yeah, it's budgeting our groceries and everything. But it's more than that. It's actually also computing our net worth, how much of our nest egg we already accumulated. And every time that we set out a goal, for example, if you want to buy real estate, if we buy another property, we usually talk it together. There's no one person that takes like majority vote. It has to be unanimous with both of us. So it also comes when we decide how aggressive we need to save for retirement, or if we're going for standard FI, lean FI, or fat FI. We discuss that.
Yeah, it 100%. Needs to be like a hell yes from both of us. It shouldn't be just from me. That way, if something bad happened, it's not like, because you decided this is your fault. So it should be like both of us. So it's our fault, and it's also our win.
Yeah. Well, I love that. I'm glad you're both on the same team. It sounds like you are so far along in your journey. I'm so thrilled to hear that you've been able to help your family, that you've brought family members here. And just curious, I'll let maybe you guys answer this for them. It's your brother and a friend. This is their first time to one of these events?
Yes.
What's their take on it, if you don't mind? I'm just curious.
I think I spoke with my brother when we were hiking that time too, and I asked him, so how do you feel that you just hear me from all the other, you know, just repeating what I'm saying to you? And he's like, no, it seems like they have like different perspectives. Because my brother, he was thinking if he's going to invest in stocks or real estate. So I kind of like, oh, this person knows real estate, this person knows stocks. So I want him to like know it from different person. But I feel that he's enjoying it.
Good.
Yeah,
because I mean, I've brought my daughter to her first camp, I guess it was 4 years ago, and she's here for her fourth time, so that's fun. So I do encourage people to, you know, if you have a friend that might be interested in this, that you know, you're not dragging them kicking and screaming, I would highly suggest you, you know, bring somebody into the fold, and it's not a cult, you know, some people might think, what is this thing I'm going to, and instead of religious camp, and oh my God, what is going to happen here? But yeah, I find that kind of spreading it through bringing people into the community, and they'll find out how, you know, cool this community is. So thank you so much for coming up and sharing your story.
I I think those two booms we just heard were them dropping the mics.
So for this kind of final act, and I love, so we had a presentation by Tom, and I like to talk about, you know, kind of reaching the finish line or phi, and he called it graduation. So I love that idea that you're just graduating to a new part of your life, stage of your life. So we have Darren and Jolene up here. So everyone, welcome them.
Were you just walking past camp or what? Yeah. That's an inside story, yeah. Hopefully we'll get to.
Yeah, sure.
So the idea of this last segment, I wanted to talk about, and Kevin and I will also share a little bit of our stories because we're in the same, I guess we're graduates, if you want to put it that way, about the fact that this is doable. That was kind of the whole point of fireworks. And there are different ways of kind of accessing funds in retirement. I know there's a whole like discussion out there in the podcast world about the middle class trap. I don't agree with that necessarily myself. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about what you can do once you get over this quote finish line or graduation. So I wanted to ask you guys to maybe give us a little bit of background about your story, and I'll let you go from there.
Yeah, sure. So we like to say we were accidentally FI. Mm-hmm. Or we did not know anything about FI or the FIRE community until we were going through a corporate divestment and acquisition, and work went from fun, rewarding, and enjoyable to not. And then we started looking around and see what else is there, and running our numbers, we're like, whoa, wait a minute. And then I think Jolene discovered through a stack of books on a vacation one time, the FIRE community, and we dug into it and discovered we were already able to just walk away.
Yeah, the first time I saw the word FIRE was in December of 2019. So then in the end of May of 2020, I became a corporate dropout class of 2020. And then Darren left in...
1 year later.
1 year later, so...
And if you don't mind sharing, what were your ages at that time or approximate ages?
I was 45.
Okay. And 48 when I walked out.
So that presents a challenge, right? Mm-hmm. You have to figure out, well, how am I going to access funds? And I know from previous conversations, mm-hmm. you guys shoveled a lot of money, as did I, mm-hmm. into the tax-deferred mm-hmm. kind of bucket. Maybe you can talk a little bit about, yeah. you know, your path to doing that. I know most of us, that was just kind of drilled into our heads, and then how you figured out, well, it's not trapped.
Right. So we had two good incomes, and so, and not knowing that we might be leaving work career in our 40s, it was logical, at least in our mind, to put as much as we could in tax deferred, right? Bring down our gross income as much as possible during those working years. So then when we suddenly decided we were going to change direction, we had a fair amount of equity in a house in a somewhat high cost of living area, but almost everything else was in tax deferred. And
so the day after was my last day, the next day our house sold. And so our house proceeds funded our brokerage account because we were, you know, very heavy in our 401ks, which became rollover IRAs and our Roth accounts.
And before yeah. we get to the next topic that I want to get to, now, Kevin, you were also a retiree in your early 40s, correct?
43.
Yeah. And then how did you, you know, access funds or whatever at that time? What was your approach to funding your life at post 43?
My wife and I both contributed to our qualified workplace plans, and I had matchings and she had hers. But we also saved extra money to our brokerage account, and we had, you know, some total market index. Actually, honestly, I didn't know about total market index until 2009 when everything was going really bad, so I just started buying over time then. Before that, we actually had CDs and bonds because that's what I learned. And so we saved enough that those interest rates were good. So we had brokerage accounts. So what we did was we just funded the early retirement activities through the brokerage account We took sales, and my wife also had a small pension, so we had some of that. But the pension really only covered our medical insurance, and she got $46 a month deposited after that. So it was kind of funny, but it was still kind of nice. We still get that. So we do use our assets, and like Mark will say, we have sold some property stuff, a home, to fund some of that. So we've done some balance, but we do sell, and we do use that to pay for life.
Now, as Darren and Jolene said, and I'm going to repeat the same for myself, kind of found FIRE or FI after retirement, it sounds like you kind of knew about this in advance and maybe were putting money in the brokerage account in anticipation of retiring early. Is
that, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't staying at work a long time.
So you were intentional about building up your brokerage account because you knew you were going to need that money.
Oh, no, I didn't know how the distribution would work.
Okay.
I still barely know. I wing it. I understand this stuff and have a structure, but it's not like you, Mark. I don't have my accounts labeled and color-coded and planned out. And it's the truth. I mean, I know a lot of this stuff. Look, I kept that good. No stuff. And we're all trying to figure this out as we go, and we will until end of plan. But we were saving money so that we had money to spend over time. Absolutely. And I didn't even really understand the qualified accounts. We just put it in there.
Yeah. So just to give you a quick story for myself, I didn't know about this whole financial independence thing. I kind of had an idea because I read The Millionaire Next Door. I had read some other books. You know, it was kind of a goal. I wanted to retire at 50. That was a goal that I met. But I, too, had pretty much, I would say it was like 85% of my assets in tax deferred, but I avoided accessing it. And we're going to talk about how you were able to access it, but I wasn't thinking in that direction by selling physical assets. So I did some of the same things that you did. I had a second home. I sold that. That was accessible funds, you know, to put in the brokerage account. I just recently downsized my home. I was in Crested Butte. I sold that house. I bought a new house in Longmont for about half as much. So that was accessible. I know Becky over there, who is giving me a hard time about not selling stocks. I've yet to do that. I'm working on that. I will definitely have to do that at some point. But so I basically was able to sell physical non-cash flowing property or assets because I did not rent out these properties. But you had a unique way of accessing your account. So I'd love to hear about that a little bit.
Okay, so first, is it the first year or so was a lot of selling physical assets, the house. We had two cars. We went to one. We had a boat that we sold. And so it was a process of downsizing because we knew we wanted to be either nomadic or semi-nomadic. We didn't know yet, but that's really kind of what we did, what became my job during COVID while he was working one more year. But go ahead.
Yeah, so a lot of it was about just downsizing, but that also freed up some capital. Our plan when I left work was live off of our brokerage account, which was the equity from that house because we were significantly downsizing, and do Roth conversions during that period of time, let those age and tap into those 5 years down the road.
So that's the Roth conversion ladder. Yep. Did you learn that from Brandon the Mad Scientist or
that was one of the sources, yeah.
Okay. What other sources did you?
Oh, I don't even know. We were listening to so many podcast and reading blogs at the time. We were quite the sponges.
Sounds like you were listening to very good experts.
We were.
Random voices and words on the internet.
On the internet.
We're defining your path.
Yeah.
Yes. Fantastic.
I think around 2022. So we, you know, set ourselves on this path for the Roth conversions. And then I think it was in 2022, we heard a podcast or watched a YouTube from Sean Mullaney, and he talked about the change in the 72T. So I remember reading about it in 2021, and kind of just like, that's not going to work for us. But then when the rules changed, we didn't really change directions. We chose a different path.
And so for those that aren't familiar, can you describe what the 72T is?
Yeah, so the 72T is just a means to access your tax-deferred account. So in our case, rollover IRAs without the 10% penalty. So in short, there's different calculations, but you can carve off a portion of your primary IRA And then you begin these distributions from that, and it's the same amount every year until 59 and a half or 5 years, whichever is later.
And there are some caveats with that. You need to be careful about certain rules. So maybe just give us a quick and dirty on what you need to avoid not to have an issue.
When you the first step is to carve out the accounts. Yeah. So depending on whoever your custodian is, make sure that that account is well labeled. Yeah. So that you don't accidentally do a withdrawal from that account, and that you don't accidentally do a Roth conversion on that account, because just the way some of the interfaces are for some of these houses, that you can accidentally do something. So.
Yeah, I think the main thing is don't take any extra distributions from those account or put anything else into that account. You basically leave it alone, except for that clearly defined distribution.
Yeah, and it's not as scary as some people make it out to be, as long as you just kind of set it up and monitor it and withdraw as you're supposed to, but not anymore.
And at least at our firm that we use, everything's automated. Like, we have a distribution date, and it just transfers from that account to another account. We do put eyes on it, make sure we have cash available to distribute at a few days ahead of time. And then that day or the day after, we make sure the funds got transferred.
And you can still invest it as you choose.
Yep.
And so
you can
forth,
be as aggressive or as conservative as you want.
But prior to the withdrawal date, you just need to make sure that cash is available for the
If I'm not mistaken, I believe there is an option to, if there aren't funds available, it will go ahead and sell funds for you. Yeah. We choose to sell funds to make sure there's that cash available on our time. So if the market's up, so a little bit of market timing there, but we don't want it to automatically sell, when it's down potentially.
Okay.
So just to confirm, you took your rollover IRA, which came from the company plan, and then you rolled over to a new IRA, a smaller portion, so that was its own IRA, and that one was in its own SEPP plan. Well,
correct.
Substantially equal periodic payments
plan.
Yeah,
I added a P.
And Darren did one, and then I did one.
And if you take $10,000 distribution from that in the first year based on the calculation, you set it up so you could have $10,000, that distribution must be made each year until you're 59 and a half or 5 years, or whichever is later. So if you're 49, it's going to be 11 years.
Correct. So,
right. And if that $10,000 comes out, that is considered ordinary income, and you pay that at your ordinary income tax rate.
Yes.
Now, how do you do the taxes for that?
So we pay quarterly taxes. We plan our annual income every year. I can tell you what our income is going to be this year, because it's all 72T distributions or Roth conversions. So, we know how much we're going to get distributed, and we pick whatever amount we want to pay taxes on. In our case, we fill up the 12% bracket every year. So that means we do a Roth conversion up to the amount that would equal the top of the 12% bracket.
How many income sources do you have stacked?
We have our brokerage account. We have his 72T, my 72T. And we're doing the Roth conversions, and we have maybe, a couple or a few grand of miscellaneous income.
So you actually have to do this spreadsheet to track how these stack up to make sure you take full advantage of this wonderful 12% tax bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind if you go over that?
Because it's just taxed at 22%. That extra dollar over is another 22 cents.
Or 15% because of capital gains.
Or capital gains.
Now, I know we've had this discussion before, but is there kind of a sweet spot for the 72T age-wise? Or
I don't know if anybody's thoroughly researched it. Our feeling is mid-40s until mid-50s, earlier than that, because you are locked in. Again, if you started this in your 30s, you're going to, at age 30, you're going to continue it for 29 years. And that's a lot of constraint for a lot of people.
And the set is, and you have to carve a bigger
yes.
a bigger separate IRA for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I don't know that many people would want to be locked in for that duration. And also, I don't think it makes sense to start when you're within a few years of 59 and a half because you can access those funds penalty-free anyway. So, you know, starting later than 55 may or may not make sense for most people.
Do you feel like this gives you some freedom for spending because that money's coming in no matter what you do now? Or do you?
Oh, absolutely. We were looking
at
set
aside, or is it?
Yeah, if we weren't pulling this money out of IRAs, we were potentially looking at bigger distributions in our 60s or bigger RMDs later, pushing us into higher tax brackets then. So for us, it's a great move for tax optimization, but it slows our use of a brokerage account. So that brokerage account that we started out with is being used up at, you know, a much slower rate.
So the question I have is, did you have any challenges with spending, kind of shifting from the saving to the spending mindset?
Not so much. For myself.
I love how you said that. Nope.
I think Jolene had less trouble shifting to spending than I did. I'm more of a safety minded, a little more conservative. For us, it was, or for me anyway, it was about how much we changed our lifestyle and not knowing exactly what that new lifestyle was going to cost us. We travel more than half the year. We love it. And, you know, but to know in advance what that's going to cost was really a big unknown. Was it going to be, you know, $70,000 a year or $140,000? So, but after a couple of years of doing that, it's working. We're extremely comfortable now. As we need to free up funds, get on the phone, sell some shares, and it replenishes the brokerage account.
So you're not afraid to sell
not
shares,
at all.
Apparently. Okay, because that is a topic out there these days.
I think it was easier for me because like the last 15 years of my career were running a business function within a large corporate environment, and it was a support function. So there were always unexpected things coming up, and yeah, you did have to mind the budget. So it was like constantly thinking about creative things or things we needed to, phasing of projects, et cetera, to meet the corporate budget. So I think it was more, I used a lot of the skills I learned there to, it didn't seem like it was a big insurmountable task to overcome. It was more learning it and knowing that there's, to me, it was more like there's abundance of different options also like with the healthcare. And it was like, oh, there's a lot of stuff to learn. So if anyone's, you know, I would recommend doing like some research and reading ahead of time because it is a lot of information to take in that, you know, we didn't think a lot about before, at least I quit.
And then how did you kind of, I'm curious, and I'm going to ask Kevin the same thing and I'll answer it for myself, but did you do any kind of analysis like we are good? How do we know we're good?
So prior to leaving our jobs, we had our financial advisor run our scenario. And actually that was part of the intake as we were going through this acquisition into the new company as we were switching custodians. And
yeah, they assigned a person at the brokerage place.
So take in all the information and when do you want to retire and all this stuff. So that got us thinking. And so that was kind of the first model saying, oh yeah, you could potentially do this. We had a next door neighbor who worked for another firm. We gave him all of our numbers and we ran the scenarios and he's like, oh yeah, you guys are good. And then we subscribed to Bolden, which was New Retirement at the time, ran all of our own scenarios. So after two people and our own analysis, we were comfortable.
And how about you, Kevin? Did you like run the numbers or you just winged it?
I've tracked my spending since I was like 17, couldn't figure out where my allowance or whatever went. Pretty cool, huh? I know I was cool. And so we've done that for decades. So we knew what we spent and it was really consistent. Some things went up each year and some things went down, but it was consistent. So we knew what we spent and we, going into leaving our careers, early retirement, we built our model based off of how much money we had, any cash flow that we might have, because I taught part-time just one night a week, so I had a little there. And we built our model off of what we'd been spending with some inflation built in over time in the future versus our assets that we had, not a lot of thought was given into the possible growth of the markets in the past 15 years. My wife's been retired 14, I've been 11. And so we had no idea that the markets would return what they did. We happen to be 65-35, maybe 70-30 equities to fixed incomes, assets. And so the numbers got a little skewed, greatly good, over the past decade or so. So yes, we had a structure, but it's unrealistic right now to, well, we could spend that and we would just leave it all to the hogs, which we've talked about in our sessions. So even when you plan for something, you don't know what your spending is going to be. You definitely don't know what your assets are going to be. You don't know what your home partner situation will be if you're with a partner now or if you're not. If you add a partner, the partner subtracts. So all these variables, we talked about agility. So yeah, I had a plan and it was totally irrelevant in a few years, luckily to the good.
Yeah, my experience was the same. I knew what I was spending. I had an idea of what we would spend or what we thought we could spend. Of course, I went down the rabbit hole of the 4% rule and then Big Earn's 3.25% and then with contingency on top of that. And so I had a good idea. I did the same thing. I did New Retirement. I did, you know, Money Guide Elite. I hired a retirement planner to do a plan on top of that more recently, just to like, I am good, right? But yeah, I think a lot of us in this community probably are overly cautious and have many contingencies. And like Kevin said, I mean, I know we've had the wind at our back. I retired 10 years ago and it's been far better than I ever anticipated. Not to say that that will be the case for the next decade, but that is the experience, I think, of, at least of all of us, that when you plan for the worst, it's probably not going to happen. And there's usually a lot of buffer in there. Yeah.
Well, I like to tell people that we have a lot of options, right? So we can adjust. You know, we could cut back on our spending if we need to, you know, cut back on a couple of the trips. We still got our skills. We can go back to work. It may not be at the same level or the same type of career that we were, but you look around, there are so many ways
to make money. Do you really consider that ever in your head as a variable, or are you just saying that out loud?
As a backup.
Really? Are you just saying that out loud?
As a backup plan, right? If the market tanks 50% and we had to, we could.
That's a great point. Do you have non-volatile assets held, like 2 years in a non-volatile asset or 3 years, so that you couldn't ride out a historically standard average downturn without selling with the volatility?
We keep 4 years worth in cash or CDs.
So if all hell breaks loose, and it's not a hell yes, it's a hell bad, and you find at the end, so you're saying at the end of the 4 years, you might have to regroup and go do something. You're crazy to say. You're crazy to say I can go back to work.
I'm saying there are options, right? So there are people.
Jolene said, yeah, you could go back to work.
This is a great example where you can be on totally different pages with a partner and it can still work out. We didn't have a master plan for when we retired. We didn't think much about what we were going to do. We just started trying different things. We moved three times. We've moved three times since we quit. So this is year six for me. So yeah, you don't have to have it all figured out. And
we're friends here. Yeah. They're just not sitting here for the first time we've met, by the way. But I would still tell you you're crazy if I just met you.
I have no intention of going back to work.
So in kind of conclusion, as people who have graduated, I would love to hear any thoughts from you guys that you may want to give to people that are on their journey to FI or, you know, anything like that. Any thoughts on that?
This is Kevin. Yeah. Yes. Figure out what you dream about, what you love, and do things now. Do things in the future. When you build your retirement plan, this future plan, don't build it from my assets will fund this X lifestyle. Look at it from, I want this lifestyle mm-hmm. as a dream. Will my assets support this dream lifestyle? Hopefully, you're dreaming so big that they won't, and you'll have to scale your dream back a sliver and see if it's okay. But maybe you'll get a good tailwind and your assets will climb, and that full dream will become possible.
How about you guys, Darren, Jeline?
I've got two thoughts. One was very similar to Kevin. I see so many people posting in Facebook groups or wherever asking, here's my number, can I retire? And they haven't included what their future living expenses are. They might know their current living expenses and they know what their assets are, but current living expenses are not the same as future living expenses. And I think that's the biggest thing, or one of the biggest things that I see gets neglected. Figure out what your new life is going to cost. The other is find the social network, find the community like we have here at Camp Fi or Economy, or even at your local Choose Fi group, wherever. But like for us, we never met another person that had early retired. We just had the courage and had found enough information online to actually do it, partly because it was COVID times. But once we found real life people, it's been wonderful. And I would say if you can find those people before pulling the trigger or even along the journey, it is immensely valuable.
I would say for me, it's you don't have to know what you're going to do afterwards. I know a lot of people talk about that. Maybe it's just me, but what it really worked for me was like doing many experiments, trying different things, different hobbies, different ways of travel. Some ways didn't work out. Like our through hiking really works for us, and finding certain different rhythms. So I guess you don't have to have it all figured out. And a lot of what I hear from other people, at least that have been out like for 5 or 6 years like myself, is that your life really changes in ways you can't anticipate. Mm-hmm. So I think for me, it's more about knowing exactly what our like base, what Roger says, the base great life, or what are my like real running costs I need for my life, and then be flexible with the rest of it has worked for me. So as long as I know, that's how we set up the 72T. It covers our base life. So I know that's all covered, so we can tinker and change things and increase or decrease the Roth conversions and all the technical stuff as the years go on. But knowing to have the solid foundation, the lights are on and the bills, the regular bills are paid, it gives space to think about different ways of being.
Yeah, my only one thing would be, well, not only one thing, but one thing would be that enjoy the journey. Because life will change, like you said, expenses will change, and don't feel like it needs to be this destination that you have to wait for to really enjoy the journey and enjoy your life. And we talked about the fun bucket this afternoon. That's one way of doing it. And I agree 100% about finding that community, and this mm-hmm. is one. So I would highly encourage everyone to come to a Camp Fi. You can go to campfi.org to get tickets. They do go very quickly, so definitely consider getting them if you want to come here. And so thanks you guys for coming up here. Thanks, Kevin, for joining me up here.
You're in my dream. You're all in my dream, the community, my Fi cousins.
Yeah, I love that, the Fi cousins. So Fi's better with friends, as Diana says. So thank you very much, and we'll see you at another time, or you will hear from us at another time on another Mark's Money Mind show. Thanks again. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. If you would like me to answer a question on the show, please send it to mark@marksmoneymind.com and put podcast question in the subject line. Let me know your first name, or let me know if you would like to remain anonymous. Also, I would appreciate it if you would recommend this show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next time on the Mark's Money Mind show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. Now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur. So please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.